This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host, and we'll chat today with one of the most dynamic young string quartets on the scene, the Verona Quartet, four musicians hailing from four different points on the globe. They rose up in prominence by winning or placing highly in prestigious chamber music competitions around the world. Last year, they won the equally prestigious Cleveland Quartet Award. They have served a number of residencies, beginning their latest last year, a bit muted by COVID, as quartet in residence at Oberlin College and Conservatory. Though being around for a few years, they have waited until now to release their debut recording on the Azika label of three early 20th century quartets rarely found paired on disc. Music by Leo Janáček, Karol Szymanowski, and Maurice Ravel. In fact, you're listening to the evergreen second movement of Ravel's only gift to the string quartet repertoire, his 1903 quartet composed at the age of 28, as performed by my guests on this new CD titled Diffusion. I spoke with all four members of the quartet, Jonathan Ong and Dorothy Rowe violins, Abigail Rojansky viola, and Jonathan Dormand cello, therefore a five-way Zoom call back in April. very happy today to be speaking with the Verona Quartet, and all four are on the program today, which is always a treat. From top down, I guess, Jonathan Ong and Dorothy Rowe on violins, Abigail Rojanski on viola, and Jonathan Drummond on cello. Thank you all for being here and taking the time on this Zoom call, still COVID. So congratulations on the new CD. This is a debut CD. And I don't know, in researching you guys, it's hard to find a date when you were formed. Does this take a while? When did you actually form as the Verona?
Well, hi, first of all. Hi, David. Thank you so much for having us on. It's really a pleasure to chat with you, and we're so excited to share this music with everybody. I'm jumping in here to talk about formation date because Jonathan Ong and I are founding members. Our cellist, Jonathan Dormond, we affectionately refer to as JD because... Okay. There was already a Jonathan in the spot. So, but the quartet formed, we like to date it back to about January of 2013.
Okay. All right. So about 7 years on or 8 years on. I'm just curious, this is your debut CD. We'll talk about the CD as we go. But I mean, 8 years, is that a long time for you guys? Was this in gestation? How do you feel about the release of the CD? What does it mean to the quartet to have this first CD out on the market, as it were?
Well, I think that, you know, for taking a long time in a way, I guess, for us to get there, it was important that we were choosing music that we really felt passionately about and really sort of says a little bit about who we are as an ensemble, and that we're fascinated in particular by this time period in history. The early 20th century is so much interesting creativity and so many directions that music flows in. And for many reasons, I think it sort of represents us quite well. So we're very excited that this is finally coming out. We hope that everybody enjoys listening to it.
There's a myth, apparently, that if a quartet lasts 7 years, then you're golden. Like, wow. You've done all the hard work. So they say. So I think I don't know if that's true or not, but so we're just happy that we're past that mark. Yeah.
Came up with the 7 years. It's certainly not the Borodine Quartet. They've been together forever.
I don't know. Do you guys remember who told us this?
Maybe it's like a marriage analogy. You know, if you can last 7 years, you can last the rest of time.
Yeah, maybe. So I ask all quartets. I've had many quartets on over the years this program, and I asked them all, why formed? I mean, you're all accomplished musicians on your own, and there's usually a common ground. I know there's only two of you who were founding members, but you could all have careers gone down the path of soloist or be sitting in some orchestra very comfortably. I mean, but you've chosen to form the quartet. So just why for the founding members, maybe Abigail and Jonathan, and then why Dorothy and Jonathan, you came on to the Verona? That's always an interesting question of why form a quartet.
The one thing I could speak to is a sort of happy intersection of coincidences, of lucky coincidences. So we sort of, on the one hand, we kind of independently, individually had just a passion for chamber music and for collaboration, for the repertoire, for the type of interaction. I'll speak for myself in saying that I always loved it. From the first time I played in a string quartet, I think it was about 10 years old, through the moment that this quartet formed, I always just had this intensity about it. First, I didn't even know what it meant to be in a, quote, in a string quartet, but somehow it's what I wanted to do. I never stopped sort of dreaming of that. And that passion intersected with meeting a number of people. So not only Jonathan and at the time, the other two players in the quartet who had similar interests and had the willingness to really work, you know, very hard toward this unknown thing. But on top of that, we had something that was actually invaluable, which were a powerful group of supporters and mentors. And without them, we really would not be a string quartet. So at the time, we were at Indiana University in Bloomington, okay. Indiana. Our teachers were all incredibly supportive of us. So Atara Rod, Eric Kim, Alex Carr, and the Pacifica Quartet had just joined the faculty, and they were the quartet in residence. And we really wouldn't be here without them. They supported us so immensely and so fully and generously that we owe them so much.
I had the Pacifica on, I think it was pre-COVID, so it would have been 19 or late 18. They were guests on the program after many years of wanting to have them on. And to join, Dorothy and Jonathan, to join a quartet kind of midstream,
I mean, just talk about that.
So for me, I actually joined the quartet very early on after its first year of formation. So I kind of feel like I'm a founding member, sort of, maybe. Just like as Abigail said, I have always loved chamber music. I grew up in a musical family, so I played a lot of chamber music with my sister and my mother. So it was just always around me. And I actually was in a string quartet prior to this one with Jonathan Ong when we were both studying at the Cleveland Institute of Music. So when the Veronas were looking for a second violinist, John thought of me, called me up, and I was like, yes, sign me up. I'm there. I'll be there in 2 seconds. And then it was just, yeah, it went on right after that. And I've been so happy and excited to be in this career.
Good. My trip to the quartet was a little bit different. I had never actually met any of their acquaintance before sort of coming to do the audition process. But I obviously am originally from the UK, but I studied in the US. And after finishing my studies, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So I thought I'd go back to the UK and try my hand at a few things. And I did some auditions. And I was quite lucky to be playing guest principal with the Philharmonia Orchestra and Royal Northern Symphonia and BBC National Orchestra of Wales. I got a lot of great experience doing orchestral music and teaching and all sorts of things, you know, that crazy London music lifestyle. It was really fun. But, you know, the day that I got the email from the Veronas about potentially having a little trial to see how it worked out, I think just something within me knew that there was, you know, that's where the passion was lying, was in chamber music. Even though I was very content doing the orchestral stuff, maybe I wasn't the most natural fit for that kind of role, but I wouldn't have known it had I not tried this other path and been able to fit into the Veronas Quartet. So, I mean, it's just a happy set of circumstances, really, and a little bit of who you know and being in the right place at the right time.
Again, turning to my guest, the Veronas Quartet's debut recording on the Azeka label titled Diffusion, the opening work is the String Quartet No. 2 from 1928 by Czech composer Leoš Janáček, subtitled By the Composer, Intimate Letters, inspired by his long and spiritual friendship with Kamila Stoslova, a married woman 38 years his junior. The composition was intended to reflect the character of their relationship as revealed in more than 700 letters they exchanged with each other. The viola plays the musical role of Kamila, and here is the first movement. Thank you.
Why Verona? Is there some connection to the city, or what's how does the name come about?
Well, our quartet philosophy, one of the main tenets of our philosophy is that we believe that music is storytelling, you know, and when you play a concert, you are telling a story. And so in some ways, the name Verona pays tribute to William Shakespeare, who's one of the greatest storytellers of all time. Yeah, that's
okay.
Also, it's also easy to remember. You know,
yeah, it's easy to remember, but it's kind of a two-step process to shape. Right. You guys really got a big bump by winning chamber music competitions, and you also got the Cleveland Quartet Award. But the competitions, and I've had a lot of instrumentalists on this program and talked about competitions, especially the way too many piano competitions and the violin competitions. But chamber music competitions, I mean, just talk about your feeling about them. They did a lot for you guys. I mean, where are we at with this field of musical competitiveness, if you want to put it that way?
I'll talk about that. Yeah, competitions are an interesting thing to talk about. You know, I think it was Bartok who famously said that competitions are for horses. We see competitions first and foremost as a way in which we can have a goal towards which we improve as a quartet and define our voice and work really hard towards it. And, you know, regardless of what the result is, I think the main goal is that we've grown as musicians by the end of the day. That being said, winning a competition definitely helps to put you on the map a little bit. It gets you some recognition. It doesn't by any means get you the whole way there, but it helps to create some buzz around your quartet. And then, you know, when you build upon that, you have to start defining who you are as a quartet, trying to make your identity known to people. So there's so much more than just competitions in a quartet's career. It's very easy to get pigeonholed into just thinking about competitions as being the be all and end all.
They were very beneficial for you guys for the full year.
Absolutely. Yeah. We had a very good fortune of doing competitions on, I believe, four different continents, and we won top prizes at all of them. And, you know, yeah, that really, really kickstarted our career. People started to call us and, you know, say, hey, we'd like you to come perform. And, you know, one of the big milestones was winning the Concert Artists Guild competition in New York City, which got us management. You know, that's been a really, really wonderful relationship, which we've just moved on to a commercial manager as of last week, actually. So
what does the Cleveland Quartet Award mean for you guys?
Oh, the Cleveland Quartet Award. Yeah, I'll let JD talk about that.
Well, I don't know if I'm the best person to talk about it, but I will just say that, you know, the Cleveland Quartet for us anyway is just a huge inspiration. The musicians and having a personal relationship with all of the musicians from the, you know, over time by listening to their recordings and having played for them and just knowing what they're about as musicians, the sort of integrity that they bring to music making and to string quartet playing in particular. So it's a huge honor to be recipients of the award in their name. It's another platform for us to be able to have more concerts at some of the most prestigious sort of music societies and venues across the United States. And of course, the Cleveland Quartet Award isn't a competition. It's sort of, it's a mystery sort of how you actually get awarded it in some ways, but sort of like people come and spy on you, I think, while you doing your thing. And that's how you get noticed. But, you know, as a young group, when you're starting out competitions, the main thing that they bring, in my opinion, is like an opportunity to be able and a platform to be able to perform. Because one of the great ironies of being a classical musician is you sort of get more opportunities by having opportunities. You know, it's very hard to get concerts and whatnot in the first stages when you're just starting out. So having the opportunity and the platform to go and perform and be recognized for what you do well, people will notice even if you don't take away the first prize or whatnot. And so again, the Cleveland Quartet Award and that philosophy of music making about the integrity of the music and for us to have opportunities and the reward from that, from the Cleveland Quartet Award is to be able to go and perform and do what we do and sort of develop as a group and always every year, you know, be sort of adding in the drops into the bucket, if you like.
You, like many quartets, do residencies. You've had a number of them. This past season, you were at Oberlin. Abigail, I think you're an alum. We have two sons. My youngest son goes to Oberlin, so I've been there. But you aren't just like dropping in and dropping out and dragging people 30 miles southwest of Cleveland to get to the hamlet of Oberlin. You live there on campus. What did you want to accomplish with this? I mean, how are you engaging with this residency? Because this is not every quartet you know, sets up tent on the campus they're at.
Yeah, Well, it's been a very unique year because not only was it our first year at Oberlin, but this has been the year of the pandemic. And so starting out under those circumstances was certainly unusual, but Oberlin really responded to it, you know, intelligently and very effectively. And for that reason, in addition to the fact that, yes, we have joined the community in the greatest sense of that, we all live here, we've been able to really get to know the school and the student body and the amazing faculty in an intimate way. And that's really special for us because it allows us to give our best to the school. Obviously for me, yes, I'm an alum. So coming back here is a very interesting experience, very wonderful. I feel like I've been given a second chance to do Oberlin even better than the first time. And to get to do it with my colleagues in the quartet, I mean, honestly, I couldn't think of anything really better than that. So we've had the most wonderful time and we're so delighted to be a part of this community.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing that you would kind of take up residency there. The Oberlin, for the fact of where it's located, kind of makes sense that you would just kind of join the community. There's nothing around there, you know, it's just Oberlin. So good luck with that. All the schools have had to chart their course with COVID and how they had that, and the, you know, Oberlin having the conservatory and the college. So good luck with that.
So before we get back to my guest, the Verona Quartet's debut album, let's sneak a listen to a composer who will be featured on their next CD of new works for this old medium. Here, captured back live in 2017, are the closing minutes of the second movement titled Simple Sugars from Michael Gilbertson's string quartet.
You as a quartet have championed a lot of new music for string quartet. In fact, the follow-up CD will include some of those composers, hopefully, when it comes out. But this first recording, the debut recording we talked about at the top of the interview, called Diffusion, Janáček, Chmielewski, and Ravel. Now, the Chmielewski is a little rarer, but the Ravel and the Janáček have had many recordings. So two things. First of all, title, why Diffusion? And then secondly, just your approach to why these three pieces and why they should live together on this first debut CD.
Yeah, so the title Diffusion, it plays off of the idea of cultural diffusion, which is essentially the migration of cultures across the globe. And it's one of the ideas that's very, very important when we're talking about a unity as a globe. Global unity. And as a quartet, we're all from different places. All four of us are from different places. So this concept of intersecting cultures and exploring cultures that are beyond our own is very intimate to us and very important. It's really one of the elements that makes our union so strong. So we knew that we wanted to play with this idea through repertoire, but not just sort of repertoire that abstractly represents the idea, but also repertoire that was very intimate to us. And so these are pieces that have come from kind of right from the beginning, some of them, of our time together, and that we really felt a strong connection to. And then in and of themselves, they're all come from a period of time, a sort of turn of the century and a bit after that, when this idea of exploring, you know, cultures beyond our own and really appreciating something outside of ourselves that was so important. So it was, like I said, an intersection of a lot of interesting elements.
I just would like to say that I was particularly really excited to record the Chmielewski because besides JD, the three of us, we didn't know the piece beforehand. So I was really excited that this piece was introduced to us because it's less commonly heard and performed in North America. So yeah, I'm super excited that we get to share this piece along with the Ravel and Janáček with everyone.
Yeah, I just mentioned the fact that like the Ravel and the Janáček have had a number of recordings is that you kind of throw your hat in the ring instantly against other string quartets from various eras that have recorded these pieces. So it's an interesting choice, I thought, for a debut CD. And again, I look forward to the second CD with some of the composers you've championed and worked with who are breathing and alive and walking around. There are certain summits for a string quartet. One thinks of cycles, Beethoven, Shostakovich, Haydn. I mean, where are you guys at with that as a group? As far as, I mean, is there interest in diving into one of those, or are they being put off? Or,
well, absolutely. I think every quartet, you know, I think it would be a shame if a quartet were together for 30 years and never learned all the Beethoven quartets, all the Bartok quartets. And that's definitely something we aim to do and something we're always working towards is, you know, actually doing as many cycles as possible, playing as many string quartet pieces as we can. However, I do think there's sometimes a little bit of a rush to get into like recording cycles. And I think it was an intentional decision on our part to not start with a cycle, to really define our voice and find the music that we're really passionate about. Like you said, Janáček and Ravel have been played a lot of times, but you know, in some sense, when we approach these pieces and we kind of take a view, actually, that one of our mentors, the Juilliard Quartet, had, is that you always approach every piece of old music like it's brand new. See what kind of a special take you can give to it. So yeah, that's a really exciting process.
Also, if I may add, just a personal take on the album. You know, it's very typical. If you go through all the albums of string quartets that have recorded Ravel, for instance, so typically they're paired with the Debussy and maybe the Dutilleux quartet or the Fauré, whatever. You know, a very French program. I mean, and those are great, you know, recordings and whatnot. But I also think that it's interesting to listen to, if you want to listen to an album all the way through, not the whole thing has to be sort of related in the most obvious sense. And it doesn't always have to be from the same style. I certainly love like eating grapes, but I don't think I'd want a whole meal of grapes, you know, like that kind of thing. So I think sometimes these complements and this sort of narrow time period, I think what we like about the Diffusion is that it has such different flavors, all happening in a short sort of geographical area within Europe in a short time frame, but everything sort of influenced by each other, but completely gone the opposite way. Right. And that for me is just as a reason that we wanted to put this album together that had just a slightly different flavor.
It's certainly a unique pairing of the three. I mean, I can't think of another recording that has these three quartets on them, you know. That's a nice way to come out of the gate. Let's talk about another area of what you do and what's important to the Verona, and that's your community and educational outreach and programs. You've been very successful. It's interesting. I just watched the Kennedy Awards on TV when we're recording this. It'll air at a later date, but they were honoring Dick Van Dyke, and you had a very successful turn in Danville, Illinois, which he's their most celebrated, I think, son from Danville, right, is Dick Van Dyke. And that's a really out-of-the-way spot, too. I'm Chicago-born, so I know Illinois, even though I'm out here in the East Coast. So just talk about these programs you do, both with school kids and then in the community, and why this is important to you.
Yeah, we do a lot of work that's in the community. And just that very term itself is, I think, the best way to describe how we feel about this work, which is that what we do is entirely community-based. The work itself in the rehearsal room, it's a small community, right? The four of us. We go out and it becomes a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And so not only are we bringing music wherever we're going, but we're sort of learning from and feeding off the environment that we're in, which is incidentally why no two performances are exactly the same. Because this is, I think, something, a misnomer. I think the audience member frequently, and maybe it's a result, I don't know, of the recording era where you're sitting in your living room, I hope, and listening to our CD, I hope. and you feel like, you know, you're just an observer in that sense, you are, but actually as a performer, and when we do community engagement, we're performing with the audience. The audience is a part of the performance. What they're giving to us is a part, it gets woven into the performance. And so as we're playing for school kids or, you know, doing a masterclass or playing in a retirement community, we're feeding off of that environment and it changes how we see the music, because we're seeing it through the eyes of those that we're sharing it with. That just tells you kind of why it's so important to us. But the diversity of what we're doing, like I mentioned, a few different environments. You know, we do quite a lot of work actually in North Carolina. We have a residency with the Chamber Orchestra of the Triangle, and we do perform with the orchestra. We curate a chamber music series as well. And then we go into the community and we work with school, you know, the Durham School of the Arts and Duke String School and all kinds of things. And it's just an extraordinary feeling to have, you know, like I said, woven ourselves into the community in that way.
And you want to continue this as part of the quartet's mission to try to put music in places that aren't pay by the seat concert halls type of thing. You know, this is important to the four of you, right?
Right. And I think it actually, it should be, I think every musician should see it as kind of a responsibility. You know, I think not that everybody should love classical music, but we should be able to share a love for classical music with everybody, and we should show them right. What we're passionate about it. I think that's a very important thing going into the 21st century when, you know, there's so many different avenues of entertainment people can explore, rightly so and wonderfully so. But, you know, us as classical musicians, if we can't share our music, then what do we have? You know, we should be able to share it.
Well, Jonathan, you mentioned opportunity for musicians before. This is opportunity for audiences just to hear it. I mean, some of these people have no clue, or they have stereotypes about quote unquote classical music. And you can bust those down just through one performance and engagement with them as far as what it really, you know, can bring to them. As far, it's commendable that you guys are doing this. You know, a lot of groups are, but, you know, this is really important to the four of you.
Turning to the rarest work on my guest's new debut CD on the Azika label called Diffusion, the 1927 String Quartet No. 2 by the Polish composer Karl Szymanowski. This is the third and final movement with a fugal structure and using a Tatra Highland melody, as performed by my guest today, the Verona String Quartet. ¶¶
we'd be remiss if we didn't mention COVID, even though we're coming out of it, maybe. It's funny with the string quartet. I'm trying to think of the last string quartet I had in Cadenza. I did a whole piano series the last few months, but I think it was the Dover quartet. And just, you know, that they didn't even weren't able to be in the same room for so long. And you guys are so used to, you know, performing with each other. So, I mean, what did COVID mean for you guys as you charted your path through it?
I mean, it was a culture shock almost, you know, it just sort of, it was totally unexpected. And I remember we were in North Carolina doing our residency there, and we were about to do a concert, like an hour before the concert, we were like, should we do it? Should we cancel? Do we need to cancel? What's going to happen? And anyway, it was, I don't know, traumatizing might be too serious of a word, but it definitely shook the boat. And, you know, we all went back to our respective homes. I'm from Nova Scotia, Canada. So I went back to Canada. JD went back to the UK. John was in Boston and Abby was in Maryland with some family. And all our concerts got canceled, like one by one. We get an email like, oh, this concert got postponed. And it was pretty depressing. I'm not going to lie. It was hard. And we didn't play, was it like 6 months, you guys? I can't even remember. Something like 6 months of no work. And while I say all of that, in a way, I guess there's one like slight silver lining. You know, before COVID, we were pretty busy, fortunately busy traveling, concertizing, and that's all great. But, you know, after a while, it gets pretty exhausting. So when COVID hit, it was like a forced vacation. And, you know, we were forced to be still. And it actually was really, at least for me personally, I felt like it was necessary and really healthy just to be still, have time to reflect, be with family. So I think some goodness came out of it.
When was the first time the four of you got together to play? Or have you?
Oh, man. Well, I think JD should take this question because it gets better.
Oh, well, the unfortunate part of COVID was that when it hit, if you like, I was just in between visas. I had to leave the country and go back to the UK. Of course, nobody knew what was going on and everybody was learning about things in this situation for the first time. And all these border controls were put in place, which meant actually I couldn't get even an appointment at an embassy. And I tried to get one in Belfast. I tried to get one in Amsterdam. They were all canceled. And then in the end, through becoming a sort of, and I'm joking when I say this, but a mini expert on American immigration system, I managed to acquire an emergency appointment in London and be able to get back in December. So it was a long time that we were out as a group. So we started playing together again in January of this year all together. But I'm very fortunate, you know, that A, I have such patient and wonderful colleagues that were willing to wait out a ride like that, but also just, you know, what it means to play together again. Because in a way, even though, you know, you're not doing what you do every day, in a way, I think getting back to it, I think as a group, we've actually improved because of it. And I think that partially it's because the power of the imagination, when you are just alone and practicing your part and say you're preparing to come back to the group. And the first thing we rehearsed when we got back together was Beethoven 131. And, you know, preparing that and having to use your imagination of what the rest of the group sounds like when you're just playing your own part, for instance. I think that's a very powerful and meaningful experience that you don't do with maybe the same full intensity that you do when you're actually sort of estranged, if you like. So for me, I take that as a valuable lesson. And there are many things that we can learn from the pandemic as players and that I think have helped us become better. But, you know, there's no replacement for playing together and there's no replacement for live audiences and all of that.
I would think, Dorothy, you would have had even a harder time getting from Canada to America because it was so stringent as far as no Americans, you know, nobody leaves. So it's amazing you guys got together in January. Jonathan, to your point, we don't know what these changes will bring down the line as far as concertizing and who's going to be in the concert halls and repertoire and all the rest of that. There will be changes because of COVID, which are some of them will be good. Some of them will be good. Just briefly, what's ahead? So the next CD will be contemporary composers, but what's ahead for you guys? I mean, are there gigs on the horizon, you know, for you and all that?
Yeah, thankfully, concerts, we've done a few in-person concerts already in the summer. The summer is going to start picking up. We go to Bravo Vale in Vale, Colorado. We're going to Tuckamore in St. John's, hopefully, if the situation where international travel becomes a little bit easier. A lot of the concerts that were postponed over COVID got postponed to the next season. So you know, thankfully we'll have a pretty full touring schedule. And also on top of that, we have the tour that came out of the Cleveland Quartet Awards. So it's going to be a busy time for the Verona Quartet. We're going to have to get used to the red eyes and waking up at 4 a.m. to catch a flight again.
But you have the new CD out to sell at intermission, so that's good.
So we just talked about what you guys are going to do in the future. And recording-wise, next recording will be of the contemporary works, correct? That's already in the can? Wonderful, wonderful. Is that also on a Zeke? What label is that going to come out on? Do you know? The new recording?
That is in discussion.
Okay, got it. Congrats on the new CD. We look forward to anything you guys do. We're a very dynamic quartet. I close all my cadenza interviews by asking my guests the same two quick questions. And the first is a hypothetical question, which says if you could chat with someone from the past, someone you never had a chance to talk to but could, I'm wondering when I ask that, what name pops into your head first? You can get swamped with names. And I thought we'd start top down. So Jonathan, you're up first, unfortunately.
Oh my goodness, the pressure. I'd love to meet Stravinsky, Igor Stravinsky.
Oh, that's cool.
He's my favorite composer, and I'm just amazed by the way he can take just an image and turn it into music, and just so evocative. So yeah, I think it'd be a pretty interesting person to meet.
Maybe you can convince him. It'd be tough, but you may convince him to write a longer piece for string quartet rather than the four minutes you have.
It's a shame he didn't write more for string quartet.
Yeah. Dorothy, you're up.
First name that comes to mind is Mozart.
Oh,
I know, not a very interesting, but I love his music so much. I find that his music is just beautifully simplistic, and I think that's a really hard thing to achieve, you know, in music. And Mozart.
Easier to talk to than Stravinsky, probably, too.
Yeah.
Abigail.
You know, I might have missed the memo on whether it was supposed to only be a composer.
No, it can be. I've had everybody from Jesus Christ to Groucho Marx over the many years. So,
well, my mind for some reason first went to Vasily Kandinsky. I love Kandinsky's artwork, and I love that period of time, and I do think there's a lot that's musical in it. But then I said to myself, "Oh dear, it's probably supposed to be musical." And then right away I thought, I would love to talk to Ignaz Schuppanzigh, so the first violinist of the Schuppanzigh Quartet, the quartet that premiered most, if not all, actually, of Beethoven's quartets.
Right.
Very close friend of Beethoven's. And on the one hand, although I'd love to, you know, meet Beethoven or something, I feel like you probably get a truer image of someone from the people they spend time with. So
that may not be very positive when it comes to Beethoven. Compliments would be rare, I would think. Jonathan.
Oh, like Abby, I guess, in a way, I would love to meet like a really great legendary tennis player, but a lot of them are still going. So actually, a fellow Brit, I would like to meet William Walton.
Oh, okay.
Because I'd like to go to his villa in Italy. And main reason for this is I would love to discuss with him about his sort of like writer's block and his difficulty, and like the fact that he destroyed a lot of his first drafts of pieces, and how somebody comes up with something so artistically wonderful but having such a torturous process going through it.
But that conversation would have to take place at his villa, otherwise the deal's off, right?
It has to be there.
Yeah,
it has to be in Italy. I need a gelato.
Final question is non-musical. Everybody I interview during normal times, not COVID, on this program fills their life with music, as the four of you do, not only performing together, but independently what you have going. But when you have to step away from music, pleasure, relaxation, enjoyment, non-musical things to do, what do you do? And bottom up, Jonathan, you're up first.
Oh, well, right now it's French Open, so I'm watching a lot of
You are a tennis geek.
Yeah, and cooking, and that's this week.
Okay.
But most of the time, that's a passion. Yeah, okay. I follow tennis like a nut.
Abigail.
Yeah, I'm sort of an obsessive cook and baker. I could very happily spend an entire day just in the kitchen, just whipping up gosh knows what. So the pandemic was only a little bit hard because I couldn't give what I made to that many people except for Dorothy, who lives very close by. But on the bright side, she's a very appreciative eater. So she's like, everything I make, even if it's terrible, she loves it.
So, Dorothy, besides eating Abigail's stuff, what else do you do for...
I should say it's never terrible. She's too hard on herself. For me,
my colleague's going to laugh, but I love watching movies, and I also really love getting to know the actors.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will go on a YouTube rampage and watch YouTube interviews for hours on these actors. Wow. Who were in the movies that I've watched. And recently I went to see the new movie that just came out, A Quiet Place Part 2. I don't know if you're familiar with the first one that came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
So I went to watch that. It was amazing. And one of the reasons why I went to see that one is one of my favorite actors is in it. His name is Cillian Murphy. I don't know if you know the show Peaky Blinders. Have you heard of that?
No.
Netflix original. No. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I could go on, but yeah, I love watching movies and just like learning about the life of an actor and that whole world of cinema.
Oh, cool. Jonathan.
So obviously food is the main theme of the quartet. We share a love for music and food. So I love to cook as well. But I also, you know, in my free time, love to visit with friends and family. I recently rediscovered my love for basketball over this past break that we've had. I'm still trying to decide if I should take the risk and get back into it, you know, and the fingers.
Yeah, wash your fingers.
It's a little bit dangerous, but, you know, good exercise.
Yeah, don't grab any rebounds. As a quartet, when you guys are out touring, do you do anything together, the four of you, that you enjoy doing? I'm assuming maybe eating is one of the things, but I mean, do you enjoy doing anything together?
Yeah, we're a funny bunch because we're actually really good friends. We do have boundaries. We have to have time where we're not together or else we'll eventually start hitting each other. But we actually do hang out. Sometimes it won't even be intentional. We'll just gather and realize a few minutes we're just hanging out. So yeah.
Thank you, Verona Quartet, very much for the time you've taken today. The Verona String Quartet, Jonathan Ung and Dorothy Rowe violins, Abigail Rajansky viola, and the Brit-born Jonathan Dormond cello. You can find out more about the quartet at their site, veronaquartet.com. Their debut CD titled Diffusion is released on the Azika label. Check it out at Azika, AZICA.com. Azika is also distributed by Naxos at Naxos.com. We'll dip in once more to that recording as we opened the program with the delightful second movement of Maurice Ravel's only contribution to the string quartet repertoire. Here is the fourth and final movement of that work, as performed by my guests today, the Verona String Quartet. And as always, I'm glad you're in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.